Hey, you guys, I'm Jenny. You guys know me. This is my Tomes of Terror show, where I review horror books. Now, if you've been following this series that I've been doing, this is another book that was not featured on my 2021 TBR list, and that's just because I follow a lot of other YouTube horror book review channels, and I kept seeing this one turning up, like, in a lot of people's lists, and just from the, you know, one or two sentence synopsis of the book that some of them gave, I was like, man, that sounds really good. And I might actually really need to read that. And it has really, really high ratings on Goodreads. So I was just kind of like, man, that sounds good. I'm going to buy that one and I'll put it up in the, you know, in the rotation just because I wanted to really get to it because it sounded really awesome. So this is the 2014 horror novel Suffer the Children by Craig DeLuey. I feel like, okay, so the premise of this, they talk about it on the back, so it's not really a spoiler. I think on this one, I probably won't spoil the ending, but I am going to go into a lot of maybe detail or discussion about what happens in the book. So, as usual, if you don't want to know anything about the book, why the hell are you even watching this, like I usually say, but I'm going to talk a lot about some of the plot points that happen here. So if you don't want that spoiled for you, then obviously turn this off, go read the book, and then come back. So as I said, this came out in 2014. Not sure I don't know if it was his first book or his second book or anything like that. I will note, though, just a kind of self-serving sort of note that I'll make here. This is published by Permuted Press, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster. Back in 2007, Permuted Press published a zombie anthology called History is Dead. It was all historical zombie tales, and I had a story in there. So, you know, all the other stories in there are good too, but I think mine's the best one, just saying. So yeah, so Permuted Press does a lot of, you know, vampire zombies, apocalyptic fiction. Now this book, nominally a vampire story, but not exactly. And also apocalyptic fiction. So it's almost kind of like a vampiric apocalypse, but it's not necessarily supernatural. You know what I mean? Like, the vampires aren't necessarily supernatural. There is, like, a scientific, it's more like a disease-based type of vampirism rather than a supernatural kind of vampirism. But there is a little bit of, I guess, what you could call supernatural or paranormal stuff, like a little bit of it, because it does involve, you know, dead people resurrecting, which obviously can't really happen that we know of, but they do actually have a scientific explanation for it, and it sounds reasonable enough that you don't be like, nah, man, that's, you know. So the premise of this book, which is what really made me want to buy it, because I was like, oh my god, this sounds awesome. So you know, you're kind of following a couple of families. It's like three different families, and all of a sudden one day, just out of the clear blue sky, every single child under the age of puberty, you know, all prepubescent children, one day they just all drop dead. It doesn't happen all at once. It's almost kind of like a global wave. It's scary because they don't, I mean, this is a pretty focused story. It's focused on one town, Lansdowne, Michigan, but it does have like a global impact because it happens all over the world. So you kind of have this horrible thing of like, you know, it starts happening in one place and then it just keeps going and keeps going. And so, like, some people that, you know, didn't get it till the end of the wave, you know, they know that it's coming and they're like trying to freak out, like trying to think that maybe there's something they can do about it, but there is nothing you can do about it. Spoiler alert. So, like I said, all of the kids in the world just essentially drop dead. And it seems almost like, it almost seems like some kind of cerebral hemorrhage or like a stroke or something like that, because a lot of them say something like, you know, they smell burning toast or something, which is, you know, usually a sign of like a stroke. So then they all just suddenly die. So imagine the immediate impact of every single child in the world dying like within 12 hours or 24 hours or whatever it is. And imagine like the fucking massive, you know, not just the crazy amount of grief that would cause, but also the logistics of it, which this book does really go into. So like I said, if you're not down with dead kids, I don't know if I would really recommend that parents read this, because it's pretty horrific. And, you know, there's billions of dead kids in this, and it's not a happy book at all. It's pretty, pretty dark. 3 days go by. And like I said, there's kind of a thing where this follows three families, essentially. There's kind of a, you know, quote unquote, working class couple, Joni and Doug, and she runs a daycare out of the house. They have two kids. He's like a waste management, like a garbage truck driver. And he has a little bit of an anger issue also, which comes into play later on. And then you have Ramona, who is a single mom, and she has a son named Josh. And then you have a pediatrician, David Harris, and his wife, Nadine. They run their own practice. Now, they did have a child, but their child died in a car accident like a year before, you know, or like 8 months or something before this event. Now, they end up, when all the kids die, it ends up being called in the media Herod's syndrome, which, you know, if you know your Bible, you'll know why they call it that. You're following kind of these three families and, you know, and the loss of their children. And it's 3 days, this horrible grief. And then Doug, who is one guy who, like I said, he works in waste management, and he kind of gets shanghaied into body disposal because in this one county where the story is set in Michigan, there 90,000 children are dead. So, and they don't really have anywhere to put all these bodies. So basically, they're just kind of like having to put them in these big mass graves, like out in the landfill and shit like that. So it's, you know, it's bad enough that you have all these people grieving for the sudden and horrifying death of their children. But now there's all of this, you know, shit to deal with where so everything, basically everything just starts to kind of fall apart. I mean, obviously, nobody wants to go to work. Nobody wants to do anything. Everybody starts to have like apocalyptic kind of shit, where, you know, they're cleaning out the grocery stores and all this other kind of thing. So that shit starts to happen. That goes on for a little while. And like I said, it kind of, the book kind of goes into, you know, the repercussions, not only for this one town, but also globally, like, you know, what the repercussions of this event would be in real life. And then 3 days after the Herod syndrome event, where all the kids drop dead, they start waking up. Only problem is they're still kind of dead, though. Like, they're still dead bodies. They're still rotting, but they're walking around. Not exactly like zombies, because when they wake up, they're still kind of like their normal selves. So obviously, this causes another sort of massive global cataclysm of everybody being really, really happy that the kids have resurrected. But now there's this other issue. Like I said, the kids are still dead. They still smell like dead bodies. You know, they still have bloated, gassy abdomens and shit like that. And the ones that are waking up, some of them have already been buried. Because like I said, they put them in body bags and then they just put them in these big like mass graves. And some of them are waking up and they're still in the bags because they don't breathe or anything like that anymore. So, you know, now Doug, the garbage man, he has to go and like fucking start digging all these kids out because all the kids are coming back to life. There's also kind of a really scary thing where in the 3 days between when all the kids die and when they all wake back up, the pediatrician, David Harris, he's like this really, he's probably my favorite character in this book, just because he's very, very rational. He's very scientific minded. You know, he's still grieving his son, like I said, who died before the car accident. So he has like a little bit of resentment because his kid didn't come back because his kid had died before all of this happened. So, I think his wife feels more resentment than him, but you know what I mean? So he has a little bit of that, but he really, really wants to help and find out what caused all these kids to die. So he had all of some of the dead kids like brought into his lab, and him and some other doctors started doing autopsies on them, as you would, because you wanted to, you know, you would want to find out, you know, is this permanent? It's like, does everybody carry this? Is it going to be a thing where it's like, if you have a kid, you know, are they going to die? You know, will there be no more children anymore? Is the human race essentially going to die out after this generation? So he's very, very gung-ho about figuring out what the hell caused this. So he had done some autopsies on some kids. And then 3 days later, when they all start waking up, then there's like this whole big thing where him and like some of the doctors are like afraid they're going to be tried for murder and stuff like that because they didn't know. You know, so like kids are waking up on the autopsy table. So it's horrifying. So this whole scenario is just a horrifying scenario. So after all these kids start waking up, and like I said, they're still kind of dead. So you know, the three main kind of families at the center of this are, you know, of course, overjoyed, even though the kids are creepy, and dead and stinky and whatnot. But they, of course, it's their kids, so they bring them home. But the weird thing is that even though they seemed normal at first, when they bring them home, they start going into like this weird stasis. Like they just kind of like sit there and stare, and you know, they don't talk, they don't do anything like that. It's like their eyes kind of move, but that's about it. And then it comes to light that if you feed them human blood, they have to drink it, then it will perk them back up and they'll be just like their normal selves again. However, this is only temporary. I think the, I can't remember what the exact ratio was, but it was just like one pint of blood equals an hour or an hour and a half or something like that. So once someone finds this out, obviously everything starts going horribly, horribly pear-shaped, because now blood is a valuable commodity and people need a lot of it because your kid's only awake for hour and a half, like per every pint of blood, right? So these parents are going, so like society is going, like it's getting worse and worse and worse while people are trying to, because obviously you can only give them so much of your blood, because that's kind of what, you know, the moms and dads like start out doing. They're like, well, obviously you can have some of my blood, but you can only give like a pint or two, you know, every month and a half or whatever it is. I think it's 56 days, they point out, or you'll die. So once people have depleted their own blood to just get another hour with their kids, because the kids, what happens is they'll perk up and they'll be totally normal, just like they were before. But once the blood runs out, they call it medicine. Once the medicine runs out, then they'll essentially just die again. So they go back into stasis there and they're like a dead body. So the body will continue to rot if you don't keep waking them back up. So once, you know, the parents and everything have depleted their own blood supply and they can't give their kids any more of their blood, obviously like a black market springs up and selling blood on Craigslist. People start kidnapping people and, you know, like they have even like cops and shit like that. They have this whole underground blood selling ring where they just like kidnap homeless people off the street and just like drain them of blood. You know, people start murdering people and it's just kind of like this horrible, horrible, just this horrible breakdown of society. And it's really, really good, even though it's supernatural in the sense that, yes, it's dead kids coming back to life. But as the book goes on, there is kind of like I said, a reasonable, feasible sort of scientific explanation for it in that it's a parasite. And the parasite, just like some parasites that get in ants and like make them do weird things or whatever, it's kind of like that. Like everybody has this parasite. So it's just like The Walking Dead where everybody has it like when you die or whatever. So this parasite will basically, it reacted with the hormones in prepubescent children. So everybody that had already gone through puberty, it didn't affect them. But everybody that was a kid, it did. So it had something to do with like the chemical changes. So this parasite basically is trying to, the parasite eats blood. So it resurrected all the kids and essentially made them into vampires just to get blood and feed itself. And so it makes the kids behave like they used to. Problem is, every time you wake the kids up with the blood and then, you know, for an hour and a half or however long, and then they die again, you know, and they go back into like their death stasis or whatever, every time they come back, they're a little bit less like they used to be. So they started, you know, their memories and personalities are starting to break down a little bit and they're starting to get like a little bit feral, you know, which would happen because, like I said, there's, you know, they're going through and like they're dying. So, you know, their brains are degenerating. So every time they come back, they're a little bit less like themselves. So this book is, this was fantastic. I have to say, I don't know what it was, but it's like as soon as, and it's weird because it just started out, it doesn't start out like in this big splashy way or anything. It just kind of starts out just introducing our three families, you know, and it bounces back and forth between, you know, different people's perspective. You know, sometimes it's Joni, who's, you know, the mom of, you know, of two kids, and then Doug, her husband. So sometimes it's his perspective. Sometimes it's David and Nadine. Sometimes it's Ramona, who's the single mom. So it bounces back and forth. And it, at even some point, like later in the book, it even goes into like some of the kids' point of view. So they can, as they try to like think about or describe what it's like to die and then be brought back. So the beginning of the book is basically just introducing these characters, and you like jumping around between them and their, you know, their interrelationships. But there's something about the writing style, there's something about the way that he writes that just immediately just like sucked me right in. I was just immediately in it. And this is a real fucking page turner. I mean, this book, it was one of those ones where I read like probably maybe like a quarter of it, and then I had to go do something else. And when I was doing something else, I'm like, man, when can I get back to that? Holy shit. And then finally, when I sat down to read it, I read almost the whole thing, just like in one sitting in a couple of hours. It's a, you know, it is a real page turner, because you're just like, oh my God, what the fuck is gonna happen now? This is horrible. And it's just like, the, like I said, the premise of it is so great. And the awesome thing about it is that even though, like I said, nominally you could say it's a vampire story because, you know, the kids drink, have to drink blood to survive, but the kids are not necessarily the monsters. The monsters are everybody else that's having to take advantage of this apocalyptic situation, what the parents will do to keep their kids alive just for another hour, even though they know that it's pointless. They know at some point, you know, they're going to run out of blood. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like people are going holding up blood banks. And like I said, they're kidnapping people and like, and you know, somebody believe even murdering people and like draining their blood and shit like that, just to get a couple more hours with their children. And so it really, really is very thought provoking, because you're kind of thinking, what if this scenario happened in real life? Would parents really do this for their kids? And probably they would. So even though, you know, the premise of this is a little bit out there, I mean, obviously it's a horror novel, and it probably wouldn't happen exactly like this. So the way that it's written, it seems really, really believable, and it seems really, really scary. I mean, there's a couple of scenes in this that are just like fucking horrifying. There's one scene like in a grocery store where there's this woman, because obviously what happens and what would probably really happen in a situation like this is that people with a lot of money can afford to buy blood from, you know, from wherever, like on the black market, or so they can buy all the blood they want, so they can keep their kids alive, you know, as much as they want to. And so obviously there's a lot of resentment about that, because all the parents who can't afford to do that are pretty much just going around in a constant state of anemia, because they've given their kids like all the blood they can give them, and they're getting desperate, and they, you know, they don't know where else to get it. They're starting to like, you know, trade blood for other people, are getting paid in blood, like for their jobs and stuff like that, because this has become like the only commodity. This is the only wealth that means anything, is blood, because that's what keeps the kids alive. So just the fact that these parents and everybody, really, it's not just people with kids, because there's other people too that are taking advantage of the system, you know what I mean, that are, you know, that are going to places and selling their blood for money or for other things, shit like that. So it's this whole like economy that springs up about, around it. And so it's almost like the adults, even though the kids are the ones drinking blood, the adults are the monsters because of the shit that they will do just to keep their kids alive for a little bit longer. Even though, like I said, in the long run, it's not really sustainable, because eventually you're going to run out of blood. You know, the kids' or bodies are going to rot like one day while they're dead, and then they can't come back. So it's just this kind of a great fucking horrifying premise. And I just think it was so, so well done. I mean, this is easily one of my favorite books that I've read so far in this series. It was just so compelling. So I just like the writing of it. And I don't even know, I can't really put my finger on why, but it was just kind of like, it just keeps you reading. It was one of those things where, you know, if I'd been reading this in the middle of the night, I probably would have just like stayed up all night to finish it, just because I just couldn't believe it. And I wanted to see what would happen next. But it's just, it's so, so great. And like I said, it's been out a while. I think he's written a couple other books either before this or since then. So I'll definitely be reading some more of his stuff, because this book was just phenomenal. I loved it. What's such a great idea, and just like, man, it's just really good. And it's like, I really, really, really recommend it. So like I said, if you love vampires, but not vampires in the traditional sense, just kind of more a scientific-y kind of vampire thing, and you love apocalyptic horror, because that's pretty much what this is, then yeah, you need to read this shit, like Except for the Children, Craig DeLuby. It's so, so good. I mean, easily a 5-star read for me. It's just fantastic. And like I said, I really, really, I'll probably like read it again at some point just because I liked it so much. It's just, I don't know. I just love the idea and I wish I'd thought of it. And that's kind of one of the highest compliments I can give because I'm a writer too. And whenever I read a book that I'm like, shit, man, I wish I'd thought of that idea. What a great idea. And I'm always kind of like mad a little bit, like the author. I'm like, shit, man, why didn't I think of that? But so I got that out of it. I was like that because that's like fantastic. And like I said, it really highlighted like the horrible shit that people would do for their kids, which, like I said, to me seemed completely realistic. I don't have kids, but I've known enough parents to know, you know, that this is probably kind of pretty close to how shit would go down if this happened, which is pretty fucking scary in itself. But yeah, and like I said, I don't know if I'd recommend that parents read it. I don't know. Your mileage may vary, I guess, because some people might be able to handle it. But it is, there's a lot of dead kids in it, so just if that's going to bother you, then probably you should skip it because that's the whole entire premise of the book. But yeah, seriously, read it. It's really, really good. And that'll do it for this review. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.